So today where I'm reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 24, entitled Chanting the Song Sung by Lord Shiva, and Text 62. Kriya kalapai ridameva yoginam.
Kriya kalapai ridameva yoginam.
Kriya kalapai ridameva yoginam.
Kriya kalapai ridameva yoginam.
Sadhangita sadhu yajanti siddhaye. Shraddhandita sadhu yajanti siddhaye.
Shraddhandita sadhu yajanti siddhaye.
Bhutendriyanta karano palakshitam.
Bhutendriyanta karano palakshitam.
Bhutendriyanta karano palakshitam.
Bhutendriyanta karano palakshitam.
Vede cha tantre cha taeva kovida.
Vede cha tantre
chata eva kovida.
Vede cha tantre chata eva kovida.
Kriya.
Kriya.
Activities.
Activities.
Kalapai.
Kalapai.
My processes.
My processes.
Idam.
Idam.
This.
This.
Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Yogina.
Yogina.
Transcendentalist.
Shraddhandita,
with faith and conviction.
Buddha,
sadhu,
properly.
Yajanti,
worship.
Siddhaye, for perfection.
Buddha,
the material energy.
Indriya,
senses.
Antakarana,
heart.
Upalakshitam,
symptomatized by.
Veda,
in the Vedas.
Cha,
also.
Tantre,
in the corollaries of the Vedas. Cha,
also.
Te,
your lordship.
Eva,
certainly.
Govinda,
those who are experts.
Translation of Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. My dear Lord, your universal form consists of all five elements, the senses, mind, intelligence, false ego, which is material, and the Paramatma, your partial expansion, who is the director of everything. Yogis other than the devotees, namely the Karma Yogi and Jnana Yogi, worship you by their respective actions in their respective positions. It is stated both in the Vedas and in the Shastras that are corollaries of the Vedas, and indeed everywhere, that it is only you who are to be worshipped. That is the expert version of all the Vedas. Please repeat. My dear Lord, your universal form, consists of all five elements. The senses, mind, intelligence, and false ego. And the Paramatma, your partial expansion, who is the director of everything. Yogis other than the devotees, namely the Karma Yogi and Jnana Yogi, worship you by their respective actions, in their respective positions. It is stated both in the Vedas and in the Shastras that are corollaries of the Vedas, that indeed everywhere, that it is only you who are to be worshipped. That is the expert version.
Of all the Vedas.
In a previous verse, Lord Shiva wanted to see the form of the Lord, which the devotees are always interested in. There are other forms of the Lord manifested in the material world, including Brahma and other demigods, and these are worshipped by materialistic persons. In the second canto, third chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that those whose material benefits are who desire material benefits are recommended to worship different types of demigods. And in conclusion, the Bhagavatam recommends Akama sarva kamo va moksha kama udarati divrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Bhagavatam 2:3:10. The devotees, the jnanis who are known as moksha kama, and the karmis who are known as sarva kama, are all aspiring to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Even when one performs yajnas, as stated here, kriya kalapai, he should always remember that the demigods are but agents of the Supreme Lord. Actually, the worshipful Lord is Vishnu, Yageshwara. Thus, even when different demigods are worshipped in the Vedic and Tantric sacrifices, the actual goal of sacrifice is Lord Vishnu. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita 9:23, it is said, Ye pyanya devata bhakta yajante shraddhayanvita devi mameva kaunteya yajantya vidhipurvakam. Whatever a man may sacrifice to other demigods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone, but is offered without true understanding. Thus, the worshippers of various demigods also worship the Supreme Lord, but they do so against the regulated principles. The purpose of the regulated principles is to satisfy Lord Vishnu. In the Vishnu Purana 3:8:9, the very same thing is confirmed. Varnashrama charavata purushena parapuvan Vishnur aradhyate panta nanyatattho shakaranam. Here it is clearly mentioned that the karmi, jnani or yogi, in fact everyone, worships Lord Vishnu if he is actually expert in knowledge of the Vedas and Tantras. The word Govinda is very significant, for it indicates the devotees of the Lord. Only the devotees know perfectly that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, is all-pervading. Within the material energy, he is represented by the five material elements, as well as the mind, intelligence, and ego. He is also represented by another energy, the living entities, and all these manifestations in the spiritual and material world combined are but representations of the different energies of the Lord. The conclusion is that the Lord is one, and that he is expanded in everything. This is understood by the Vedic version, Sarvam Khalam Vidam Brahma. One who knows this concentrates all his energy in worshipping Lord Vishnu. Om Jnanam Timuranthasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Krishna Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Brahmayam Dadati Svapadanti Panchakalpatrubhyasya Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I feel very embarrassed to speak here in the presence of many senior Vaishnavas, so I beg for the blessings so I can say something worthwhile. So in this verse, this is a continuation of the chanting the song sung by Lord Shiva. And in this verse, Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing a very important point, and it's being emphasized here as well. And the point that comes through the verse and in the purport is that only Krishna is the object of worship. That we should worship or adore, or praise, or serve the Supreme Personality of God, Krishna. And naturally his devotees. But the idea is that Krishna, and that which is related to Krishna. His devotees, his servants, his dham, all these things. In this world, we go to so many people for shelter, right? We surrender to, or you could say, flatter so many people in order to attain different things. And this is what material ethnic society is about, right? People serve their boss, they serve their various heads of state, they serve their family members, they serve different people. But here, the point that they're saying is that only the Supreme Lord should be worshipped. And specifically what they're emphasizing what Prabhupada is pointing out, that the worships of the demigods, the various gods described in the Vedic text, is not necessary. In fact, it's not recommended. And so generally when we read this in the Gita, we read that demigods should not be worshipped. There's no necessity to worship them. One should only worship the Supreme Lord. Because if one's worshipping the demigods, one is actually worshipping the Lord, but he's doing it in the wrong way, avidhi purvaka. He's not doing it in the proper method. So it seems, for us especially, who come from the West, it seems sort of conceptual that, okay, in these verses it says, don't worship the demigods, just worship Lord Vishnu. But many of us never worshipped the demigods in the past anyway. But it's very relevant in the sense that in this material world, we make many gods ourselves, right? In the sense that we don't worship demigods, maybe on the altar, we don't have different Durga and all these things. But we put faith in many great personalities in this world. And so in some ways, those are our demigods, right? So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he sings like this, right? He says that, throughout my life, I wasted my valuable life serving wicked and miserly men. And what have I gained at the end? Nothing. There's no benefit in serving them. They have not given anything to me in return, nor have I gained anything. So he's lamenting this way. He's saying, why isn't it that I didn't just serve you? Why did I waste my life, spend my life, having faith in and serving wicked and miserly men? So these are our demigods in modern society. These are our people who we sacrifice our lives for, right? But at the end, we gain hardly anything, or we actually don't gain anything. In India, we see this quite often, that people, they'll dedicate their life to a particular political party, right? Like the BJP, they're part of the BJP. And the whole life is spent in trying to support the BJP and to just sacrifice for that political party. It's actually a real story. Then at the end, this one person, he sort of spent 20 years of his life for this political party. And then later on, when he got older, Kishinath Gopinath, he came to the head of the society. He said, I spent my whole life in this society. Now I'm in need of this amount of money. He was unhealthy or something like this. Can you help me? He wasn't able to serve any longer. His time of service was over, like this, like that. And immediately he got a response. He said, oh, from the society you can't expect anything. Right? Immediately the moment that he stopped serving, everyone forgot about him. Even his friends who he had served with, all these things, no one cared for him. Because it was simply, as long as he was valuable for that particular society, group of people, they valued him. As soon as he was done with, as soon as he couldn't do it anymore, there was no value, right? No one cared for him. He just became part of a list of people of the past. So we find this many times. This is our experience in the material world, the general experience, that regardless of what we do for whomever it may be, even our own family members, even our very close relatives. At the end, no one is grateful, right? No one remembers us. Because no one in this world is a capable master, a master who is able to reciprocate that affection or that love that we show to someone. Only Krishna is able to do that. And we find this case, we find this very nice example being shown in Krishna's pastimes, how Krishna shows this very nicely in one of his pastimes in Vrindavan. We all know the famous pastime of Krishna lifting a Govardhan hill, right? The Govardhan pastime. So in this pastime, the residents of Vrindavan, they had been worshipping Lord Indra, King Indra, for thousands of generations, right? For millions of... ever since they could remember, their father, their grandfather, their great-grandfather, from time immemorial, ever since they could constantly conceived, they had been worshipping Lord Indra. This was the family tradition. Right? And it just so happened that one year, right, one time, they came into the talks of one naughty boy, right? So that year, they decided not to do the Indra Puja. They sort of wavered from their principle. And that year, they didn't offer any worship to Indra, but they offered worship to Govardhan instead. So as a result of this one mistake, right, so many years they were worshipping Govardhan for generations like that. But as a result of this one mistake, what did Indra do to them? What happened? Right, he just finished them all, right? Let's just finish them. He called us Samantaka clouds, and these are the clouds at the time of dissolution. And his idea was, we're just going to drown them all. How dare, you know, they don't worship me this one year. And so many years they've been worshipping him. And even accepting his idea that, you know, they had come in the talks of a small boy and had disregarded him. Even if that was true, that it was a fault on their part to do this. But still, how ungrateful he was. They had been worshipping him all this time. Just once they made a mistake. And what did they get? They were about to be drowned. On the other hand, we find that one year, they worshipped Krishna, right? Just that one year, they offered worship to Govardhan, to Krishna. And as a result, what did Krishna do for them? Krishna is so grateful that he's doing that. For 7 days and 7 nights, he held Govardhan Hill up on his pinky finger, right? And held it up for them. Just so, he could have done it in many other ways. You know, he could have just stopped the clouds and all these things. But to show his kindness to his devotees, to show his effort, to show his affection for his devotees, for 7 days and 7 nights, he stood there and he held up the Govardhan Hill until Indra stopped giving the rains, stopped pouring down the rains. So the point is, Srila Prabhupada, the point that he gets across is that worshipping the demigods or any person in this world, it's very risky, right? We don't know. We might worship them. We might serve them for so many years, and then when time comes, then we don't know what may happen. But if we serve the Lord, then he's forever grateful. He never forgets the service of the devotee. He's forever grateful, and he's forever kind to the devotee. So this is why there's a very, very nice verse in the Bhagavatam. When Krishna disappeared from the planet, then Uddhava, he was crying in separation from the Lord, right? And Rudra came to meet him. This is after Krishna left from the planet. And then he sang this very famous verse, very beautiful verse. He said, Aho vakiyam stanakala putam yikhaṁ sayapāyayadapyasādhavi lehe gatim bhātra uchitam tatonyam kambhādayālum sharanam rajema. Alas, how shall I take shelter of one more merciful than he who granted the position of mother to a she-demon, Putana, although she was unfaithful and she prepared deadly poison to be sucked from her breast. Alas, how shall I take shelter of one more merciful than he who granted the position of mother to a she-demon, Putana, although she was unfaithful and she prepared deadly poison to be sucked from her breast. So this is the particular pastime that he's referring to, is the pastime of when this demoness Putana, she comes to kill Krishna, right? And the way she plans on killing Krishna is she puts poison on her breast, and she comes as a very beautiful lady, and she walks into Vrindavan, and no one stops her because she's so beautiful. And she immediately goes to Mother Yashoda's room, where Krishna is lying there, and she wants to feed Krishna this milk with the idea that Krishna, when he sucks my breast because it's covered with poison, he'll die, you know, he'll be finished. But Krishna was so kind that he saw that this demoness, she is coming as my mother, right? Yeah, Uddhava is appreciating this fact, but he didn't see that she has poison. He didn't see the fact that he didn't see her intention of trying to kill him, and that she had poison on her breast. But rather he saw that she's coming as my mother. And therefore, she's just like my mother. She's such a nice mother. She's coming to feed me her breast milk and give me milk. So at the end, after this, after, of course, he had to kill her. Yeah, so he, he sucked her breast and also breast milk and also her life air. He sucked it out. Then after he had killed her, he awarded her the position of his mother in the spiritual world. So in the spiritual world, she's now, you know, she serves as Krishna's mother. So he says, how can I worship? How can I worship anyone else when my Lord Krishna is so merciful that to someone who came to kill him, to a she-demon like this, he granted the position of mother. So what to speak of those, he said, what to speak of those who approach the Lord with some feeling, with some favorable intention? What end will they attain? So Krishna is forever grateful, right? He never forgets the service of the devotee. And he'll never leave the devotee. He'll never let the devotee go away from him. Because in general, actually, every living entity, he's always present there as our friend, as a super soul, throughout every lifetime that we take. We may take the lifetime of a little worm or a little insect, and still Krishna goes along with the living entity as the eternal friend, hoping that one day he'll turn over. So he never leaves the devotee. He never forgets the service, even how small it may be, or how, let's say, insignificant or unfavorable it might be. He never forgets that. So there's one nice story of there's this one pujari in Vrindavan. Right? But sometimes it seems as though Krishna's not grateful, right? So that question also comes up. Here we say Krishna is the most grateful, but sometimes it seems like he lets his devotee, you know, go through difficulties and these things. So one time there was a pujari in Vrindavan, and he had served there for many, many years, like 10, 15 years. He had served there every day. And as you know, especially, even now, but especially even before, the conditions there in the temple were very, very difficult. Like they had, the conditions in India were very difficult. They would have so many, all the devotees would get sick, and especially in the rainy season, when the rainy season comes, everyone gets sick. And sometimes it's so hot. They did a study and they found out that Govardhan, this is slightly away from Vrindavan, so Vrindavan is slightly cooler, but they found out that Govardhan itself was the hottest inhabited place in the world. So there's no place in the world that's hotter, that has people there, than Govardhan. And it's actually very nice that it is this way, because for that reason, if you go, still Govardhan is still somewhat undeveloped. You see, like in this way, Krishna sort of protects his dham. But it's so hot there, 9 months out of the year, it's just burning hot, that really no civilization can develop. You know, if you want to build buildings, you have to have workers. But the workers, they won't work in such, you know, hot climates, you know, like this. And so, somewhat still is protected, even though, you know, now they're also building there. But it's very hot. And so there's so many austerities. And, he was very dedicated, and even when he was sick, he would go on the altar and worship the Lord. So he was a pujari there for many years. And then one time something happened. And, there was some misunderstanding, something. I think something got stolen on the altar, and he got blamed for it, something like that. Some people thought he stole it or something like that. So anyway, he got tired of it, and he decided to leave the temple and leave Vrindavan, go back to the West, go back to America where he came from. So he went to in front of the Radha Shyama Sundar and Krishna Balaram, and so he decided to leave. And before he left, he went up in front of them. And he said, so now I'm leaving, but now that I served you, if I actually served you and if you're actually there, I want that when I go back, now I should, you know, I should be very prosperous. He said, I want to be surrounded with money. I should have so much money, I should just be surrounded by money. You know, if you're actually there and if you're grateful, this is what I want. So, because, you know, he was sort of done with spiritual life, and now he thought, well, anyway, at least maybe now I can, you know, enjoy some material life. So he went back to New York. That's where he came from, and he settled in New York. And for the first few months, he was searching for a job. You know, he went different places and he went to find a place where he could get employed and get a decent job. So ultimately, he finally found a job, and he found it in a mine. This is a place where in New York, they print money, they print the dollars, right? So they, after a while, when the dollar bills get old, they need to print new ones, so they print dollar bills there. So he was started working there, and you know, I've actually gone to this place. They have a huge factory there, and they have huge sheets of money that they print. It's like newspapers, you know, they print these huge sheets of money, and they come through, and there's cutters, and there's different people in the assembly line, and you can take a tour through this wonderful factory. And you see all them cutting all this money, tons of money, and there's stacks and stacks of money. And then they print the dollar bills, and then they make the coins also, you know, these stainless steel coins and all these things. So he's working there, and after a few weeks, he looks around, and all around him, he just sees tons of money. Right? But he doesn't own a cent. And then he looks up and he thinks, oh Krishna, you're so crooked. You cheat me this time also. So he came to, he wanted to be surrounded by money, so Krishna surrounded him with money. No limits to the amount of money that he was surrounded by. So then after that, you know, he worked at the job a few more weeks, but after that he gave that up. He couldn't handle working there anymore, and he went out and he started working somewhere else as well. And you know, he was thinking that, you know, my life as a devotee, you know, it was just a phase in my life. It was a bad dream sort of thing. Now I'm back into life. Even after this experience, he was like, he was moved by it, but still he was trying to keep Krishna away, trying to whatever he could. To do that. So finally then he went, he had one friend, and she was, somehow she knew him, and she was a devotee. And one time they, you know, she happened to come in contact, and somehow one time she called me, she said, just come and visit the temple, you know, just come, you know, just come once. And I'm like, no, I don't want to go, you know, I don't want to start that whole thing. But actually, you know, he was a bit afraid, because, you know, if he sees Krishna again, you know, maybe he might become a devotee again. But finally, he decided to come. Okay, fine, I'll go. You know, you're asking me, I'll go. So he comes to the temple, and she goes in, and he just sits outside. You know, and he's sort of trying to keep his defenses up. And then finally, he goes in. He goes into the temple, and when he goes in, then at that time, I think it was Guru Puja, and they were offering the whisk to Srila Prabhupada, right? And then he saw that whisk, you know. And he had done this for 20 years, right? Radha Shamsunda Krishna Balabha, this whisk, like this. And when he saw that, then he couldn't control himself anymore. And he started crying. And it's just all those memories of those wonderful years of service and stuff. Even though they were so difficult, so much austerity and all these things, they all came back to him, right? You know, like this. They all came back to him. And then he realized, he said, no. That was actually reality. That was the real life. This was a bad dream. You know, this was my leading Krishna for this time. This was the bad dream. So like this, you know, Krishna will bring his devotee back to him in so many ways. Now he'll call that devotee back to his lotus feet. Because he never forgets that devotee. He's forever grateful. So in this way, no one in this material world or in the spiritual anywhere is as kind of a friend as Krishna. And this is the residents of Vrindavan, they have realized this. You know, by these different pastimes, right? Through the pastime, Govardhan Hill, all these things. They've realized that how Krishna is actually their dearmost friend. Right? At the time of Govardhan Puja, you know, Indra didn't care for them, Krishna, you know, saved them. Every time Krishna saved them. So their whole meditation, you could say their whole attachment, is focused on Krishna. And I want to read one very nice, one little section of the Krishna book. which is my favorite part actually of the Krishna book, which is describing this, how everyone is entranced by Krishna. They don't have any other object of worship. Right? This is the chapter, the gopis attracted by the flute. And this is their remembering. When Krishna goes to the forest, then the gopis of Vrindavan, they're remembering how, you know, Krishna's flute playing, how beautiful it is. Actually, they're hearing it as well, because when he plays the flute, then they can also hear it. So I just read this little section. It's a few paragraphs. Krishna was very expert at playing the flute, and the gopis were captivated by the sound vibration, which is attractive not only to them, but to all living creatures who heard it. One of the gopis told her friends, "The highest perfection of the eyes is to see Krishna and Balaram entering the forest and playing their flutes and tending the cows with their friends." Dear friends, another gopi thus spoke to friends about Krishna. "Dear friends, our friend, our Vrindavan is proclaiming the glories of this entire earth, because this planet is glorified by the lotus footprints and the son of Devaki. Besides that, when Govinda plays his flute, the peacocks immediately become mad, as if they were hearing the rumbling of a new cloud. When all the animals and trees and plants, either on the top of Govardhan Hill or in the valley, see the dancing of the peacocks, they all stand still and listen to the transcendental sound of the flute with great attention. We think that this boon is not possible or available or on any other planet." Although the gopis were village coward women and girls, they had extensive Vedic knowledge, such as the effect of the Vedic civilization. People in general would learn the highest truths of the Vedas simply by hearing from authoritative sources. Another gopi said to her friends, "My dear friends, the cows are also charmed as soon as they hear the transcendental sound of the flute of Krishna. It sounds to them like the pouring of nectar, and they immediately spread their long ears just to catch the liquid nectar of the flute. As for the calves, they are seen with the nipples of their mothers pressed in their mouths, but they cannot suck the milk. They remain struck with devotion, and tears glide down from their eyes, illustrating vividly how they are embracing Krishna heart to heart. These phenomena indicate that even the cows and calves in Vrindavan knew how to cry for Krishna and embrace him heart to heart. Actually, the perfection of Krishna consciousness can be culminated in the shedding of tears from the eyes." Another young gopi told her mother, "My dear mother, the birds who are looking at Krishna playing on his flute are sitting very attentively on the branches and twigs of different trees. From their features, it appears that they have forgotten everything and they are engaged only in hearing Krishna's flute. This proves that they are not ordinary birds. They are great sages and devotees, and just to hear Krishna's flute, they have appeared in Vrindavan forest as birds. Great sages and scholars are interested in Vedic knowledge, but the essence of Vedic knowledge is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Vedaish Sarvai Ameva Vedya. Through the knowledge of the Vedas, Krishna has to be understood. From the behavior of these birds, it appeared that they were great scholars in Vedic knowledge, and that they took to Krishna's transcendental vibration and rejected all branches of Vedic knowledge. Even the river Yamuna, being desirous of embracing the lotus feet of Krishna after hearing the transcendental vibration of his flute, broke her fierce waves to flow very nicely with lotus flowers in her hands, just to present flowers to Mukunda with a deep feeling." This section is so nice because it's showing the feeling that how the cows, it says they're embracing Krishna heart to heart. Right? So, in this purport that we're reading of this text, Prabhupada is describing how the same thing that how all these Vedas, these Vedic texts, and all these things, they're saying that how bhakti or devotion can actually only be applied to Krishna. Right? Otherwise, for demigods, it's just a business relationship. They want, you worship them, and you want something in return. But bhakti or devotion can actually be applied only to Krishna. So this you could say this section is describing how the different living entities they're all entranced by Krishna and immersed in Krishna. Actually, in this Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes how the birds they become so intoxicated by the flute that sometimes they fall over. So they're holding on to the branches and they fall upside down. And they're holding on to the branches of the trees upside down with their eyes closed, listening to the beautiful sound of Krishna's flute. So we're almost done with time. So I just end with one more story. Maybe I have two. So I was, before coming here, I was in Vrindavan for 3 weeks. And we were staying in this house, right, in this home that a friend, acquaintance of us had. So we were just staying at their home in Vrindavan. And they had a very nice place. And this story also shows how Krishna's very grateful to his devotee. So this was a very nice place, and they had nice rooms and marble floors and all these things. So the family that was staying there, they, like all Indian homes, they had employed a housekeeper, right? It's very common in India. One lady will come and she'll just clean the house, right? She'll wipe the floors like this and clean the house. So, but this was Vrindavan, right? So in Vrindavan, you have to be careful, you know. You don't know who that person might be, you know, like this. So this one very small lady, she's only about 4 feet tall, right? And a very small lady, she used to come and she'd do all the cleaning in the morning. And one time, these devotees, they were speaking with her. And they're just asking her, you know, about her life and who she was and all these things. So she said that, how she was actually living in Bombay, and there her husband and the children were there and everything like that. And her family was actually working in the movie industry, something like that. So they were somewhat well-to-do. But once they started working in the movie industry, she didn't like to be there because they weren't engaged in any bad activities. It wasn't criminal activities, but it was sort of impious, you know. They weren't engaged in any pious activities. So she didn't like that atmosphere, so she came to Vrindavan instead. And her family, they greatly liked, they liked her and everything like that, so they always called her back, but she decided to stay in Vrindavan. So when she came, then they sent her some money every month for her subsistence and all these things. So she came there, and she was staying at the ashram, this one ashram where her lady was staying at that. And so we asked her, where are you staying now? But she wasn't staying there anymore. She was just staying in the hut across from the house. And in this little, very nice, beautiful hut. And so she said, yeah, you know, I was staying there, but all the other ladies there, you know, they're more interested in talking. But I'm not so interested in talking, so I wanted to do more bhajans. So that's why I'm not staying there anymore. I made my little hut. I made this hut and I'm staying there. So we asked her, but aren't you afraid? There's only snakes out there on the ground. And actually in that area where we were staying, there's a lot of snakes. We saw a few snakes, poisonous snakes. I said, aren't you afraid of these snakes? And she said, no. She started laughing and she said, no, you know, if you always have your Gopinath, she was a devotee of Gopinath. He said, then how can you be afraid? And she said, actually, I've already been bitten by a snake once. And she was apparently one time there, and she was staying in this out in the field like that. And she was breastfeeding her child also at that time. She was also giving milk like that. And one time she got bitten, and she didn't realize that she had gotten bitten. But then she breastfeeded her child, and then the poison would go even into the child. So then she started noticing something in the child, but the child wasn't too affected. But then she started becoming very tired, you know, all these things. And then accordingly, what she she told us that her Gopinatha, her deity that she saw, she came to her and she said, "Should you fool, you've been bitten by a snake. Go and get yourself treated." So she told him, "Go to this such and such hospital." And she went there, and there, as soon as she got to the hospital, she collapsed and she got treated there. So anyway, she told us the story, and maybe we thought, maybe it's true, maybe it's hard for us to believe. But at this time, it was very, very hot. It was extremely hot. She was cleaning up this house and like four or five other houses. And we were wondering, you know, why is she doing this? If her family is sending her money, then why is she doing this? Then she said, yeah, I'm not working for myself. She goes out and she cleans four or five houses so she can get 600 rupees so that she can give it for Vaishnava sake. Right? So she can give it for the service of Vaishnavas. She was obviously, this an amazing, you know, person, because here she was, so hot, so austere, and she was just, you know, doing her service just for Vaishnava Seva, like this. So then anyway, she had this hut across from the house, and after that, they decided to build something there. So she even had to break down her hut. They said, "You have to remove your hut because you have to make a building." So then after that, she came back. And then we asked her, "So now where are you staying now?" And she says that now I just keep on walking and chanting. And whenever I get tired, whenever I get too tired, then wherever I am, I just lay down and I fall asleep. Just like that, I just fall asleep. So, anyway, I forgot what the climax of the story was. But anyway, she's just another very amazing person, and how she had come there, and with no shelter, nothing like this. She had been bitten by a snake and all these things. But our Krishna was taking care of her, and she had this immense faith in the Lord. And so it, shocking for us, actually, what was very shocking to us, is that she was just a simple house cleaner, right? She's coming and she's cleaning the house where we were staying. But she was such an advanced devotee. And we're like, where are we? You know, we're coming to Vrindavan, staying in this nice house. And she's here and she's cleaning four different houses, working so hard. And she's not working for herself, for maintaining herself, but all the money that she's getting, she's offering to the Radha-Dhamma temple for Vaishnavas. But okay, one more. This one, I think, it has a climax. So there's another devotee at Govardhan. Her name is Arjun Murtha Mataji. She's a Gopipanam for his wife. So my mother and I, we were there, and we were visiting her. So she's also a very special devotee, very amazing devotee. She's the only one there who stays at Govardhan 12 months out of the year. There's no one else can stay there during the hot summer seasons. In summer, it becomes like 50 degrees Fahrenheit, Celsius. So devotees who are there, they sometimes get huge boils on their body like that, because of the heat. So anyway, she's there 12 months out of the year. And her quality is that every day she does half a Govardhan Parikrama, just 4 hours. So every 2 days she does full Govardhan Parikrama. So again, it's very extraordinary. To do this every single day. Even the residents of Govardhan, when she goes around and does parikrama, they offer respects to her, because we did it 2 days with her, and after you're done, it's like the whole day is over. It's so exhausting. But she does that, and she takes care of 12 cows. She has 12 cows in the bathroom of her house, and she chants 64 rounds, she has about 20 parrots also in her house that she's like serving the parrots in Vrindavan as well. So she's really amazing, and she worships Giriraj. She has many, about 20, 30 Giriraj Shiras. So she was telling us this story that one time, that one year it was her birthday, and no one in her family or anyone remembered that it was her birthday. Right? say happy birthday to her, anything like that. And so she was feeling a little left out like this, you know, that no one remembered that it's my birthday. So she started walking down over that hill and on her daily bike. And she was telling Lord Balaram, she was saying that Lord Balaram, if you actually love me, then today you should give me something for my birthday. Because no one else loved me, no one else remembered me. But today, if you love me, then you please give me something for my birthday. And she likes taking care of cows. And her cows are just amazing. They're like the very sweet cows, the sweetest cows I've seen. They're just like, you know, family members. And so she particularly liked one little calf that the sadhu had at Govardhan. He had like four or five calves, but this one particular calf. And she told Lord Balaram that if you actually love me and you want to give something, give me that calf for my birthday. I want that calf like that. So that particular day, she went to Govardhan Parikrama. And again, it was very hot, it was a hot day like that. And she was walking through, and she walked past this sadhu who was living there, and he had four calves. And this sadhu comes running out, and he says, you know, I don't have anything to feed my calves. I have four calves, and they're all dying of hunger. So please, can you take these four calves, and you take care of them? So she was thinking, oh no, I just wanted one, not one. Krishna's giving me four calves. And then she told the sadhu, no, probably I'll starve from hunger if I take all four of these. You know, I didn't have anything as well. So I just take this one, the one, the spotted one that she wanted, like this. And so the sadhu was still very good. So, okay, yes, please, let me just take one. And sure enough, she got that calf on that day. So she got this calf, and but they were so weak at that time that literally they couldn't stand up because of hunger and thirst. You know, they didn't have, you know, food and water. So then the problem was how to take this calf back to her home, the house, which was sort of on the other side of Govardhan. So then they had to do an auto, right? So they sat in the auto, she and her son, and Gormon, and they sat in the auto, and she took the calf on her lap like this, and went the auto back to her house. But the thing was, this calf was so weak that on the way, it just lost consciousness. It's just like, it's sort of, they weren't sure if it died or what happened. On the way, it just lost consciousness. Like this. So the auto is going down the road like this, and they're sitting in the auto with this calf. And on top of that, now the calf has lost consciousness like this. So they're going down, and suddenly, as in India, it happens quite often, this young man jumps onto the auto. So it's her son, and the calf, and the driver, and now suddenly they have this man on there as well, on the auto. So they're like, no, get off, we don't have space here already, it's so crowded, my calf is dying like this. And the man, he sees, I think actually, he was an older man, he sees that this calf had lost consciousness, he was just lying there, like that. And so he looks over, and he sees this calf lying there, and then he does something like this, you know, some mantras or something like that, chants some mantras, and pass a calf in various ways, and he jumps off the auto where he needs to get off, and he goes away. And it's amazing, by the chanting this mantra, whatever this person did, the calf sort of wakes up and, you know, sort of comes back to life, you know, like this. So anyway, so then the calf's life is saved, and she goes back and gets the calf for her birthday. And to this day, that calf is there, and now it's a big cow, big huge cow. But these cows, you know, they're so amazing. Like most cows go to them, they like move away, right? You always want to pet them, but they're sometimes a bit scary. But these ones, you know, they do, and they come and lick you and all these things. Very, very amazing. So thank you very much. And sorry for the a little mess of stories. I couldn't remember them. But thank you.